Thanks for joining us.
Talkline Network Radio, America's longest-running Jewish broadcast network, the voice of the Jewish community.
Welcome to the podcast.
You are now tuned in to this episode of our podcast. Today we are going to interview some of the greatest and most influential minds in our field. And now, please welcome your host.
You're listening to Talk Line with Zev Brenner, America's premier Jewish broadcast on the air since 1981.
And now, here's your host.
Welcome back to the program. I'm Zev Brenner, and we're covering a tragic story of a 13-year-old bar mitzvah boy who committed suicide in Williamsburg a number of weeks ago. And we're looking at family dimensions, dynamics, especially in light of the Passover holiday when families get together, there's more stress. And we welcome to the first time Jonas and Schwartz, owner of Brooklyn's Toys for Two, Discover Toy Store Chain, columnist, Botkin, public speaker. He speaks out on these issues. Rabbi Dr. David Fox is no stranger to these microphones. He's been with us quite a few times, director of High Lifelines Crisis Services, certainly dealing with kinds of crises that we're dealing with. He is a specialist. So good luck. Thank you for joining our show. And I just want to begin by looking at this tragedy. This boy, and we're not going to mention the family name, we're looking at it as a springboard for the bigger picture. But obviously there was a divorce in this situation. The boy's father was not allowed to attend the bar mitzvah. That tended to spark this whole unfortunate tragedy. So Rabbi Dr. Fox, how prevalent is suicide in our community? I'm hearing stories which don't get really reported much, that there are situations where suicides do take place in our community.
Yes, it's tragic. And by the way, good luck to you and Rabbi Schwartz. Thank you for inviting me to join the broadcast. This is horribly on the rise in the Orthodox and also in the Hasidic Orthodox community. And we're seeing this worldwide in communities literally across the globe. There are typically youngsters in their adolescence. It's not quite as common to see children who are younger. But there's no doubt that the statistics have shown a very, very atrocious uptick in people who engage in self-harm and sometimes the ultimate self-harm in the religious Jewish community.
Terrible tragedy. Let me turn to Jonas, because you are a batchan at night. You make people happy, get involved in weddings, but you've also been speaking out about the desolation. Listen, there's a tremendous tragedy going on, divorce. There's a tug of war with parents over children. This is a result of a tug of war. So from your perspective, what exactly is going on? And I know you're speaking out about it, so I want to hear directly from you. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Zev, and thank you, Rabbi. I don't want to comment on this particular story before. I don't want to jump to conclusions why this happened. And it's just would be unfair for the family to say conclusions exactly what happened. All I know is that I'm involved in the last few years helping a lot of people with the subject of the painful subject. It's called parent alienation. Parent alienation is one of the worst problems and disasters in every community. And unfortunately, there's very little awareness in our community, the Hasidic community in particular, that people are just not aware of the damages that this brings to the children. When people have a war, husband and wife don't get along, never, ever get the kids involved. This is the worst thing for the child. It leaves an effect for his entire life. I don't know if you saw what happened on Friday. There's a guy who was close to 4 years old. He came out with a whole monologue writing exactly what happened with him 25 years ago and 30 years ago when he was a little kid. And he recounts everything what happened and what a terrible effect that has on him until today, that he's depressed and he's divorced again. And it brings him tremendous nightmares. All of the wars that was going on between his parents. And it happens to be, in many cases that I'm involved, both parents, father and mother, are nice people. But so many times we say, unfortunately, two nice people should have never met in the first place. But they met, and now they have to separate, and they have kids. And I always tell people, if you lose your spouse, don't lose your dignity. Don't lose your tzalam alokim. Don't forget, you're a mensch. You continue to be a mensch, and your child will look at you if you are poisoning him or not poisoning him. I don't know how long I have this stage, but I'm just going to give you one more point, a very important point. What does it mean, an alienating parent? Alienating parent means that that parent, father or mother, says to the child, I'm the good parent, the other parent is the bad parent. And basically, that alienating parent has to take control over the child completely. So that particular parent not only alienates the child from the father or from the mother, just from all of their surroundings, grandfather, grandmother, uncles, cousins, nephews, nieces, school teachers, everything. And they don't understand what a tremendous, terrible effect this has on this entire child. In the professional world, it's called a conflict of loyalty. The child feels that suddenly he has to be loyal to one parent, and in order to be loyal to that parent, he has to be completely disloyal to the other parent. And that makes him crazy. It brings anxiety. And the statistics have shown that most of these kids that are going through this are suffering tremendous mental illnesses when they grow up. They suffer of sex addictions. They suffer of many other addictions, drug addictions, etc., etc., and it doesn't bring good to anyone. Materialistic love is not love. But this alienating parent is giving and giving, and I have a toy store, and I see it in my toy store on a daily basis. And children are coming in with the alienating parent, and they're giving him and they're showering him, and the kids, how they look at the toy. It doesn't talk to him anymore. He got too much of it. It's like you cannot eat a piece of cake more than once, twice, three times. How many slices can you eat? After five, you feel like you can't anymore, right? Same thing with these children. Then they start to look for love, for attention, and they run to all bad places. Let's stop parent alienation.
So let me ask this question, Jonas. You know some of the parents. You said something very interesting before. You know the parents. They're good people. The father's a nice person. The mother's a nice person. So what happens when they get involved in a divorce where they become not nice people and they try to have the other parent arrested, put in jail, and all kinds of charges are made, and they alienate the kids? What happens to them? You know these people. What's going on?
It's called jealousy. It's called cruelty. I have no other words. I spoke to a father last week that I got involved fully in this particular case, that had visitation for years. Everything went smoothly. He went to office upon him every month on Shabbos with his sons. His teenage daughters are coming to him always to study for the tests at school, that you usually need a man figure to help, especially if it's poorest learnings. They used to call him every single day. And suddenly when he got remarried, next day he was subpoenaed with sex molestation against his children from one day to the other. For years he had visitation. Everything was okay. Suddenly he got married. And now for months and months he doesn't see his kids. Spent already money. I can't even tell you how much money for a criminal lawyer to prove that the allegations are not true. And obviously for in family court, for visitation, suddenly he has to have supervised visitation. And instead of asking me what happened to them, it's jealousy. It's just people just lose their mind. They just, I can't explain it.
Dr. Fox, can you explain it?
The impassioned words of Rabbi Schwartz are very, very accurate. And apparent alienation syndrome, which is what we refer to it, it's a very, very hot topic in the court systems. In this country, in Canada, I sometimes have been brought in as an expert witness to give an opinion, second opinion on this, although I don't involve myself in divorce cases that frequently. But there can be many, many dynamics. Zab, if I may, I'd like to just highlight one aspect of this, bringing the topic back to our understanding the child who's in the middle of this. May I shift it a little bit in that way? Okay, so what we've been talking about up until now is what is the fury among parents that they'll do this to each other and be blind to the impact it's having on the child. That's really what I want to bring out to your radio audience. There are a number of factors which we believe contribute to the impulse or the urge to self-harm and chas v'sholem to kill oneself. There may be addiction issues, which Avi Schwartz brought up. There may be guilt and shame issues, which is part of trauma in the history of people who end up harming or killing themselves. There can be mental illnesses that seem to explain why people are driven to the brink and end their lives. But something that we're seeing much, much more frequently are young people, including children and teenagers, who explain in their suicide note, which is found after they're dead, why they did this. And I want you all to hear this, because this very, very much pertains to what tonight's tragic topic is about. What we're reading in the suicide notes are children who say that my life is hard enough, but when I have to absorb the stresses of other people and they expect me just to absorb and hold on to their secrets or to their angers or to their depressions, and they're things I don't need to hear about and I don't want to be part of, but I have taken in more than I can manage, and the only relief for me is to die. And I've seen this in suicide notes so many, many, many times. And we can have wonderful young people. I had a situation in another country, a 12th grader in a, let's call it a Haredi school, who was destined to be the valedictorian of the class, very popular, high functioning, headed off for higher Torah education. And the person was found hanging on a rope dead. And in the suicide note, what this fine young person said is that because I'm smart and because my life is in order, everyone turns to me with their problems. Adults, teachers, the Rebbetzin, the rabbi, younger kids in the school, everyone turns to me to think that I'm smart enough to counsel them and to hold on to their secrets. I can't take it any further. There is no solution but to kill myself. So again, this is coming from an exceptionally gifted person who had no history of mental illness, had never been molested, had never been abused, was not involved in drugs or pornography. But what they said was, they couldn't tolerate other people's problems. And I think this is what Rabbi Schwartz is telling us also, that if a child is caught in the middle of parental conflict and it gets ugly, and that child or she is expected to take sides, to split loyalty, to betray the parent who's now been portrayed as evil, the child can't take it. It goes against their teva to start hating someone who raised them, who loved them, or to be told that this person is really demonic.
It's a very interesting and a good point. Go ahead, Yonason.
Amazing, amazing point, what you just mentioned, Rabbi, is the number one point that people have to realize. A child is pure. A child wants to love both parents. And when you come suddenly and you tell this child, don't love him, just love this one, not this one, you basically poison this child forever. I was just going to touch two particular stories, but I was involved last week. I got a phone call from a very, very chushuv Rosh Yeshiva. And he told me that he is a dormitory, over 100 boys sleeping in yeshiva. And now, because of Rosh Chodesh, Nissan starts Ben Azmanim, and they all go home. And one of the kids that are coming from such a home that don't go to this one and don't go to this one came to him and he said, Rosh Yeshiva, I would rather sleep myself in this building this entire month than rather go back, listen to the language that this boy used, to a gas chamber. This, wow, is the, this is the language that a 16, 17-year-old boy is using. Why would you put me, that's what he said to Rosh Yeshiva, why would you put me out of yeshiva for 1 month? I should go to a Holocaust, to a gas chamber. Friday, I spoke to a father that found a suicide note of his daughter, a teenager. And he read to me the suicide note. And there was Nisim Nisim that they found this girl, Baruch Hashem, alive. There was a roofer on the, she was ready to jump. There was a roofer on the, roof. As she came up, and the roofer realized right away something is going on. They called authorities, whatever, she's right now in a psychiatric ward. They saved at the last minute. But he read to me the suicide note, and it's mind-boggling. It's just exactly what you, Rabbi, described. They are torn apart. They are basically torn apart. And people think, oh, I'm going to put them completely on my side, and then everything is going to fall into place. No. Hashem created the child. Shloisha shit from bottom, three partners, a Kadosh Baruch Hu, Aviv v'Imoy. A child needs to have both parents. Again, I want to emphasize, yes, there's always exceptions to the rule. There are very abusive parents, unfortunately. And of course, it's different then. But don't say that my case is different. Don't use this exception as an excuse that you think, oh, I'm entitled to alienate my child because my case is different. In 95% or more cases, all kids must have two parents.
Would you say, Jonas, in the majority of the cases you're finding the problems are where parents are fighting or divorce? Would you find that maybe the stress of large families, maybe yeshiva conforming, etc., also plays a role? Or is it primarily from your experience dealing with feuding of parents?
You could have shalom bias, major issues when there are no kids in the house. You could have it when there's two kids in the house or 15 kids in the house. I have a friend that I don't want to give away too much details that has two sets of triplets and a couple of sets of twins and a couple of in between. And this is the most calm, there's not too much money there either. And it's the most calm house that you could ever imagine. The bottom line is, marriage is all about tolerance. It's all about, I'm just going to give you a very profound little story. It's the guy who comes into a mechanic shop, and he comes with a Rolls Royce, and he wants to fix the antenna of his Rolls Royce. And he says, how much is it to fix the antenna? The mechanic looks at it, says it's $100. The guy falls on the floor and he starts crying, screaming, $100, $100. And the mechanic looks at him like crazy. You know, you're driving a Rolls Royce. And he can't calm down. Finally, after half an hour trying to calm him down, he said to him, what's going on with you? He says, listen, let me explain to you something. I drove with my Rolls Royce midtown, and suddenly somebody came out of one of the buildings and was visibly frustrated about something, and he broke off the antenna from my car. I got very upset, and I backed up my car, and I knocked my car into him. I knocked him unconscious. Ambulance came. Police came. I got arrested. I had to hire a criminal lawyer. Now I probably will have a criminal record that will cost me hundreds of thousands of dollars. For what? For an antenna? For $100? Am I stupid? I should have come fix the antenna and have a nice day. Don't make a big deal about it. I always tell couples, you have a Rolls Royce in your house. Don't lose your marriage because of an antenna. Don't lose your everything in life because of your intolerance. Marriage is about tolerance. That's the bottom line. So it really doesn't matter, Zev, how many kids you have, how small or how large, how much money you have and how much money you don't have. There are people with big families, small houses, little money, and they have a beautiful, beautiful home. And there are people who have the biggest homes with a lot of money. And I always say about these people, they are so poor that unfortunately the only thing they have in their life is only money.
Sam, and you should use the antenna to tune into the right frequency. But you said it's very, very powerful. And people sometimes, we say in Hebrew, the tuffle, which is secondary, becomes the main thing, and the main thing becomes secondary. But shalom bayis, preserving the household, is the main goal. And a lot of people, unfortunately, fall short of that. Our guests are Yonason Schwartz, owner of Brooklyn's Toys for Two, Discover Toy Store Chain, columnist, Bontchan, public speaker, Rabbi Dr. David Fox, director of High Lifelines Crisis Services. We're going to be right back. Don't go away. Stay tuned.
Hey, this is Alan Dershowitz.
One of the most important Jewish institutions in the world today is Talk Line with Zev Brenner. He is so smart and he is so innovative and he has so many interesting guests. I don't know what Yiddishkeit, I don't know what New York, I don't know what the world would do without Zev. So Zev, Yasher Koach, may you go from strength to strength and keep informing us and educating us and keep fighting for Jewish values.
You're listening to Talk Line with Zev Brenner, America's premier Jewish broadcast on the air since 1981.
And now, here's your host.
And we're back. Yonason Schwartz is our guest, owner of Brooklyn's Toys for Two, Discover Toy Store Chain, columnist, Boston public speaker, Rabbi Dr. David Fox, director of My Lifelines Crisis Services. So let me ask you, Yonason, you go to weddings, you're a Boston, you help people get married. What do you recommend would be a course of action in the Hasidic community, and this may be true of other communities as well, to deal with parental alienation? What can we be teaching parents? What should yeshivas be doing to educate parents how to become better parents so we don't get involved in situations where you have suicides and you have kids going off the derech and kids really being depressed and really ruining their lives?
So first of all, I want to... The matzav, the situation that you're saying, sounds very black. We have, Baruch Hashem, an amazing, amazing community. There's beautiful Moisdei Satoira, there's beautiful Chesed organizations. There are thousands and tens of thousands of homes with beautiful, beautiful, beautiful families. I hope, Rabbi, you agree with me. And there are way, way, ma'at mina or doicha alba mina choshech. There's so much light and there's so much positivity in this community that is by far proceeding as by far much more than any other non-Jewish communities. We have nothing to be ashamed of. What can be done about parent alienation? People have to understand that when they go into a divorce, unfortunately, if it goes to court, if it goes to Beis Din, most of the times they are fighting for years, cost hundreds of thousands of dollars. And I always tell people when I listen to the cases, I'll give you in an email what the judge is going to rule in 3 years from now. As honest as it sounds, I just got over here a message and I'm going to read it to you. 2 years after I got separated, I made an agreement with my wife. The guy writes to me. I made an agreement with my wife. And all details were negotiated and agreed. The last minute, she pulled out and she decided she wants to go to court. So we went to court. We spent over $250,000 each. And after 2 years, the judge ruled the same thing that we agreed upon voluntarily 2 years ago. Rabbi, tell me if I'm right in most of cases.
Well, I do a lot of consultation in the Hasidic community. And I would underscore what Rabbi Schwartz has said. The majority of the couples who come to see me are very wholesome, loving couples. They're stable. They seek guidance on how to maintain a stable, loving home. And fortunately, the situations where there's ugly divorces going on, they are in the minority. I want to embellish, however, all of the excellent points Rabbi Schwartz is making. Firstly, we're talking about how to deal with the alienation. I think we have to look at prevention, meaning, how do we do some healthy preemptive steps that might help prevent the incidence of divorce, although it is relatively small? And we've been looking for years. We've done a lot of collaborative studies, people in my field looking at different possibilities. Of the many, many suggestions we make, one of them that might be helpful in the Hasidic community, which has not yet been implemented, would be that when couples get married, that they have a mentor couple to meet with them, meaning a healthy, well-adjusted couple who they look up to as mentors, with whom they can discuss the tensions and the conflicts which inevitably arise, especially in the first year or two of marriage. So that rather than she goes home to her parents, he abandons the family, they get the families rallying one against the other, and they go to the rabbanim and they go to their expensive attorneys. But rather than getting to that point, let's look for some proactive steps where couples can do some primary prevention, which means invariably there are arguments, there is machlokas, there's disagreements, there's disappointments, there's disillusionment about what marriage can provide for an individual. Let them have a mentoring couple who they both respect and whom they accept. They'll talk over the issues with. In confidence. It doesn't have to be a therapist. It doesn't have to be a rabbi. It doesn't have to be a rabbitson. But that's something. The second thing is prevention. We're very busy people. And from people, Orthodox, Yeshivish, Hasidish, we lead very, very busy lives. And the casualties too often are our children. We don't have time for them. The idea of mealtime among families, other than maybe Shabbos and Yom Tov, it's a forgotten art. It needs to be brought back. People go to the table to eat, they're on their phones. That needs to be barred from the dinner table. There are certain types of conversation which families need to have when they're bonding together at mealtime. And there are certain things they must avoid exposing the children to. Don't talk about bad news. Don't talk about politics. Don't talk about money. Don't talk about other people. Don't talk about illness. And definitely, parents should not be airing out their differences in the presence of the children. Children don't need to be exposed to arguments among their parents. When it's too late, which means when the couples have had a falling out and it doesn't look that, like it can be repaired, I'm going to make a suggestion. I don't think it's controversial. Typically, when he goes to his attorney and she goes to her attorney, and this is in no way maligning, I'm not bad-mouthing attorneys. They often do, for many reasons, need to have a role in adjudicating and negotiating the separation at the end of a marriage. But when you go to the attorney, don't be so quick that his attorney says, I'll tell you which therapist to go to who'll write the report that will help your case. And meanwhile, the other spouse is going to a different therapist who the attorney says, you need to see this person because they'll help the case. They need to find a counselor or a therapist that they both agree to, who's not working for the divorce, but who's working to salvage the health and the mental health of the child. Don't line up his expert versus her expert, because you're not going to be assisting the child in adapting to what looks like a horrible divorce. You need to fortify that child, and it needs to be a therapist who they both agree to, that they'll work together. And couples sometimes do get divorced. Rahman al-Islam, but it happens. For multiple reasons, sometimes couples are incompatible. There are many, many reasons why this can be true.
But it should be done amicably. It should be done amicably. It should be done amicably. It should be done as we, for the sake of the children, which unfortunately is not the case. Become more, in fact, wasn't there a house in Borough Park where they had divorce, they had a wall in between the house, between the father and the mother for many years, right? Yeah. So wasn't that the case in Borough Park? So let me ask you, Jonas, and what can be taught? And I heard what Rabbi Dr. Fox said. It's good practical suggestions with therapists and dealing with that. But shouldn't it be taught in the yeshivas? You have some influence. Shouldn't the yeshivas be teaching both boys and girls when they get married some of these basic principles? Because it's common sense, but yet people don't adhere to it.
So, first of all, there must be. In Eretz Yisrael, it's very, very popular in certain sects, especially in Belz and in Karlin, that in Belz, I know it's mandatory that every young man after the chasen, after his wedding, speak from this boat, this groups for him, this groups for the wife, just how to deal with the husband, how to deal with the wife. And that's called basically, as you said, preemptive steps to avoid the casualties. Exactly as you understand that you could take a book, read how to drive a truck, and you cannot take a truck and just go on the highway. You need to go on the truck with a teacher and with a licensed truck driver to give you the first few lessons how to drive a truck on the highway and in the city. Marriage is much harder than driving a truck. It's every day different turns and different things happen, different weathers and different conditions. And the first 2 years, especially the first half a year to a year, must be guidance. Exactly as we have a chassan teacher and a kala teacher, we have to have just teaching boys and girls shalom bayis, how to get along. And I think this has to become the next step, that every sect, every chassidus should have such an organization. In Israel, it's called Chaim Shel Osher, which means a life of happiness. And I really believe man and woman, everybody wants to be happy, husband and wife. They just need the tools. And if you don't give them the tools, that creates problems. And we should give them the tools.
I totally agree with you. We need to give them the tools. It's a basic problem that we're having is that, and by the way, you're right. The Hasidic life and the Jewish life and the firm life is beautiful, but divorce has been growing. And let's be honest, the numbers today, I've heard some statistics, you know, it's bigger than it was and it's bigger than it should be. And there's more problems because of that than we're dealing with some of them right now.
Not always it's a bad thing. Don't forget, people used to be in marriages, suffer for their entire lives and fight in front of the kids. I always tell people, shalom can be two things. Shalom can be so many times. Shalom, you make peace between two people. And shalom, unfortunately, so many times means to depart two people. So, yes, there are more divorces. Not necessarily. Of course, you have to try to avoid every divorce as much as possible and try to bring a couple together, especially with their kids involved. But so many times, unfortunately, it's unavoidable because the kids see very, very bad things, and it's not a secret. Everyone knows, and I spoke already in public many times about it. I myself went through a divorce, and I tried very hard, and we tried very hard. And it should be avoidable, but again, the Torah gives us the solution of a divorce because so many times this is a solution.
By the way, before I turn to Rabbi Fox, you mentioned the story about a Rosh Yeshiva, about a boy who didn't want to go home. What ended up happening when he went to the Rosh Yeshiva and said, I don't want to go home? Did he end up going home, or was there intervention?
So, this Rosh Yeshiva is a very, very warm Rosh Yeshiva, and it's coming to, some Pesach is coming to him. He's a fascinating Rosh Yeshiva. But let me tell you something else. This same Rosh Hashiva called me up a couple of months ago about a boy that is in his yeshiva. I don't know if it's the same boy or a different boy, but also that comes from a divorced home. People should understand the effect that parent alienation has. And he tells me about a boy that went up on the table in yeshiva, over 100 boys, everybody is quiet. He has to say something. And he was standing right next to a boy that was had a terrible stutter. He was stuttering. And he started in front of this boy. He said, "Everybody should understand. I want to tell you a very important story." And he started he started making fun of this stuttering boy in front of everybody. And obviously, I don't have to tell you what the stuttering boy felt. It was a terrible, terrible thing that happened. Of course, he had to be expelled from yeshiva. I was involved. The boy is back, and he realized that he made a mistake, and he gave a speech, apologized. That's not the point. The point is, when a child is poisoned, he has negative. Instead of getting love his entire life, he's getting hate. He brings out his hate in the most unbelievable ways, and if he doesn't bring it out as a bacher, he's going to bring it up when he gets married. And unfortunately, these children that are being alienated, unfortunately, history repeats itself, and they're going through the divorces and addictions. And I can't even tell you. At the same time, children that have the message, you know, you didn't get along, me and Tati are not your business. You have a father, you have a mother. Let's respect everyone. Let's love everyone. If the child sees a message, you know, we have differences, but respect each other, then this child actually learns from his challenges, and he actually grows up to be a healthy boy. I hope, Rabbi, you agree with me on that.
And I want you to comment, Rabbi Fox, also, is are you seeing more kids coming to you with problems in the home, and whether it's drugs, whether it's off the derech, whether it's suicidal because of some of the issues we're discussing tonight?
Yeah, I hope my voice is carrying now. I'll speak as loud as I can. I'm speaking to you from California, where we have mellow voices, so maybe it's not so loud. Is this coming through better now?
I'm hearing you a little better.
Okay, so I'll be as close as I can to the microphone. Look, globally and generally, we're seeing much more disturbance, unfortunately, in the religious world. Some of it is through environmental exposure. A lot of it is through internet access, and that's in the Hasidic community as well as in the non-Hasidic. Kids are getting tainted and poisoned. There's a lot of toxic influences out there. We do have our share. We do genetically have our share of instabilities. This is in the Ashkenazic gene pool. And sometimes that's what this is about. But yes, we're seeing...
Is it about depression too? Or depression... is it also about depression, or is depression caused by some of the factors we're talking about?
The depression, by and large, is reactive to the stresses that inundate people today. There are biologically based mood disorders as well, and they are present significantly in Ashkenazi Jews from certain parts of Europe. But right now, we're not talking about someone who's got a biological issue. We're talking about the way that our young people are responding to the stresses which encroach on them, either from the environment or, as we began the broadcast, because of difficulties in the home. That's what we're talking about. Yes, we are seeing more of it. Baruch Hashem, we have a very significant increase of skilled and professionally trained from mental health professionals. I would caution and encourage any parent or school who's going to send their child to a from person that, A, you make sure that the person really has a degree and is licensed to practice, not someone who's functioning under the radar, no matter how much of a pikeach he or she is, but that they be educated, degreed, licensed, have had supervision so that they can call themselves an expert and a specialist. And as much as possible, that it be someone who has Yiras Shamayim. I'll say that openly. It has to be someone who has Yiras Shamayim.
Fear of heaven.
And fear of heaven, and who will bring this into the therapy, not to indoctrinate the child, not to preach to the person to be judgmental, but to make sure that their hashkafa, their goals, are appropriate goals. Because invariably, I'm a professor, I've been training doctors for more than 40 years, I know that there are, even in the religious world of therapists, there are those whose Yiras Shamayim stops when they walk into the office, and they think that you have to function strictly within the confines of what's the popular approach to therapy right now. We do have to work by the standard of the profession. We can't just wing it in therapy, but we still have to maintain our cultural sensitivity and our respect for religion. We don't, chas v'sholem, turn anybody against their hashkafa. So again, these are all the criteria. We can make use of good mental health professionals, and when parents are beginning to see that the marriage is not working out, and that the child is at risk for being torn apart as the parents are splitting up, find someone who's competent. Go to someone who is referred by someone that you trust and who has all the qualifications that I've just mentioned. They meet all of the credential criteria. And as I said earlier, work with someone who will involve both parents and won't be taking sides with one against the other.
Oh, very good advice. Jonas, let me ask you this question. You're the owner of a successful toy store in Brooklyn. You're a columnist. How did you get involved? This is one of my listeners wants to know. How did you get involved in advocating for children and dealing involved with shalom bias issues? What brought that about?
So just before, I want to mention one more thing to comment what you said. Rabbi, as much as we believe in professionals, what is much more important in our community is to be a Yiras Shamayim than to be a professional. Because very, very many divorces, the divorce was avoidable, came to a divorce because of a therapist that does not have Yiras Shamayim. I'm not here to knock therapists. They're very good professional therapists. My wife does coaching her entire life for free. Just a couple of months ago, a couple went back, and now they already, I think, 4 or 5 months back together. Everyone gave up. Everyone said to get divorced. And she calls my wife every single Friday to thank her that they put them back together. So Yiras Shamayim is much more important than professional, because unfortunately, many professionals take the license because they're their professionals that they could break apart families. And we have to be very careful about it. How do I came about it? Zev, the answer to your question is, I really don't know. I got schlepped into it. I got pulled into it. I wish I wouldn't, but Baruch Hashem, I see so much result. Last week, I was at a wedding, Tuesday night, and my phone rang, and I was, as soon as the lady told me, I want to discuss with you something, I put it on the speakerphone next to a friend of mine. She identified herself, and she said that, I want you to know, I listened to what you're saying about parental annihilation, and I want you to know that I have committed the same crime. That's what she said. 6 years that my daughter is not talking to my ex-husband because I poisoned her. Please help me clean my daughter. Help me to go to the right people that how to make back the connection. Next Shabbos, is going to be a reunion of a father and 6 kids that did not see their father for over 20 years.
20 years.
Yes, over 20 years. They're going to be in a hotel for a Shabbos. I spoke to 2 of the kids. And they both admitted to me. It was totally nonsense. Now the mother is so angry. Why are you going to meet your father? She's even now, when all the kids are married, she's still trying to control them and manipulate them. Don't go, don't go. And I hear it in so many occasions. I don't know how I got into it, but I know one thing. I will not get out of it so quickly because it brings results. It brings up, we talk about it. We bring awareness. And that's why, by the way, Zev, I agreed to come to this show. Believe me, I have what to do with my days before Pesach. It's busy in the toy industry. I'm busy with a zillion other things. I agree to it for one simple reason. if one child only, to get saved because of this show, because we bring awareness, and one person, we spread the message, parent alienation is wrong, then it was worth it for me to come on the show. You know, I don't do this for money. I don't charge nothing for this, for the scholars that I do. I just want to help people that they shouldn't get suicidal thoughts and crazy stuff. They should just grow up normal people. You lost your spouse. Don't lose your dignity.
If I can just, again, I'm so pleased to meet Rabbi Schwartz, because I think so much of what he's saying and I'm saying is very compatible. And I appreciate very much listening to him. And I'm going to add something. For parents who are on the receiving end of alienation, if chas v'sholem, that's what's going on, speak to an expert in this field. There are a lot of fine books that talk about how to try countering the alienation, even if you can't. But there are a lot of important recommendations of what the estranged parent can be doing in order to get a positive message. And I'm not going to go into them right now, but there are a lot of important steps which I think can be effective. Also, although if alienation began when the child was very, very young, and certainly in a case where the youngster didn't see the parent for a decade or more, it's unfortunately very likely that they will possibly never reconnect again. However, when a child grew up and had a bond with that mother or that father who then is pushed out, the parent who will not speak ill, who will not speak negatively of the alienating parent, and whose messages, however they get through to the child, are ones of loving that child and caring about that child, and is not invoking guilt or trying to retaliate against the alienating one. A healthy child who's exposed to alienation, who's already grown up with some type of bond with the now estranged parent, what often happens is that as that child matures, they're going to have questions and they're going to want to seek out that parent and they'll want to reconnect with that parent. And then what we often see is the tide will turn and the parent who has been vicious and has been slandered and has been making allegations against the other parent, the child now begins to look down at them. And why did you do this to me? And why did you say these things? So it's sort of like a yotze scharo behefsedo, that what we often find is that the more vicious and cruel that alienating parent is, a healthy child may begin coming to a point of rethinking this, and they will end up turning against the parent who was the cruel one. So it's really not worth it in the long run. And the casualty is the child. And ultimately, everybody is hurt by this.
You just heard by Dr. David Katz, Director of High Lifelines Crisis Service. Jonathan Schwartz is owner of Brooklyn's Toys for Two, Discover Toy Store chain, columnist, Botham, public speaker, Oskin. As you heard, he's his passion about trying to help families. We're going to be right back right after these messages. Don't go away. Stay tuned.
Show. Are you interested in hosting your own radio show and podcast, or perhaps a TV program? TalkLine Network can help you get on the air from 1 hour weekly to 24 hours a day. Ideal for ethnic, foreign language, medical, business, and religious broadcasting. We also have full-time radio stations for lease, as well as FM HD channels. For more information, please call 212-769-1925. That's 212-769-1925. Or email zevbrenner@gmail.com.
You're listening to TalkLine with Zev Brenner, America's premier Jewish broadcast on the air since 1981.
And now, here's your host.
And we're back, our final stretch with Yonason Schwartz, owner of Brooklyn's Toys for Two, Discover Toy Store chain, columnist, Bothlin public speaker, Askin, Rabbi Dr. David Katz, is director of High Lifelines Crisis Services. So as we're closing out, then let me begin first with you, Rabbi Dr. Fox. What can we teach parents for the Seder? Because usually holiday time is a time of stress. So briefly, what can we do to de-stress itself to make it more acceptable, especially when you have warring parents and you have other family, extended family that add to the tension?
Okay. So I wish we had a simple formula for that. It is a stressful time. And unfortunately, the fatigue and the pressure and the finances and all the preparations often find that parents enter into the Seder where they're just drained and irritable and at their worst. What I often will recommend, what I actually will always recommend to couples is that as they're preparing for the Seder or for any yontif, that they have a talk in advance, at least a week in advance, saying, we have a yontif coming up. We're going to be together with all of our children. It's going to have its built-in stresses. And let's both resolve in advance that no matter what, we're going to remain close, we're going to be compatible, and we're going to communicate. Close, communicate, compatibility.
The three C's. And
the three C's. And that's they're going to be above sea level. Three C's. So, but we really want to emphasize that parents, they constantly find one another as Yontif approaches and during Yontif, that this is our opportunity to have a united front, to be close. Any disagreements or arguments, not in front of the rest of the family, definitely not in front of the children. And that we constantly reinforce one another's efforts. If something's going wrong, if something's upsetting one of us, that the other one comes to their rescue and downplays it so that it doesn't infect the entire table.
You might be stressing the situation. Let me turn to Jonas. We have a few moments left. Jonas, what do you recommend that families getting together that we can do to reduce the stress?
Pesach is called Pesach because it's Pesach. I always tell people, when you scream, you hear. When you talk, you understand. Pesach is a time talking, relaxing. Don't, a lot of people, as much as we say, Shema b'nei misarvecho v'al titush toh esamecho, you should continue the legacy, you should continue what you saw by your parents. It's all with one condition, that it does not bring stress to the house. Let me just tell you one example. I know the Vision Tzereb of Monsi was with his beloved name, Reb Motel Lezeche Tzadik Levrucha. Once knew a young man, very, very Hasidic young man, and he forced him to go to a hotel for Pesach, which by Hasidim is, especially by visions of Hasidim, not too acceptable at all. And Reb Motel forced him because he knew his wife is going through stress. He's going through some stress. The children go through some stress. And for this environment to be Pesach at home is not going to be a good memory for the kids. Just remember one thing. Most people, when they talk about their parents, they talk about the memories, what they saw at the Pesach table by your parents, by your grandparents. Make sure it's a calm environment. It's a happy environment. Yes, it's nice to have all the chumras. It's nice to have all of these things. But remember, don't lose your anger. Don't lose just be relaxed. Chumras is very important. But remember, amashi chumetz is a doraisa, but amashi kas is also doraisa. Pesach. Relax.
If people want to get a hold of you, Anderson, how can people get a hold of you? You don't want more people contact you? They'll find you, okay. And
I have about 400 phone calls a day. It's more than enough. It's okay.
Rabbi, Dr. Dovenfeld, how can people contact you in Chai Lifeline?
Our crisis line is always available. It's 855-3-CRISIS. C-R-I-S. 855-3-CRISIS. And you call that line. It's staffed by trained interventionists with Yerushalayim. And if anyone would want to speak directly to me, then ask the person who answers to contact me.
Rabbi Dr. David Fax, Director of Chai Lifeline Crisis Services, thank you for joining us. And I thank you, Jonas and Schwartz, who's, as you heard, is a businessman. He owns Brooklyn's Toys for Two, Discover Toy Store chain, columnist, Boston public speaker. Oscar helps so many people on a regular basis. So we appreciate both you joining here with us. You have a wonderful Pesach, and I hope people take your advice. And if only one person changes because of our show, I know many people are listening and will listen to what you have to say. If you take it to heart, think about the children. Just don't think about yourself. It's a level of selfishness where you only think about yourself. You have to think about the kids. And your actions can hurt them, not just for now, but for many years to come. So thank you for shedding light on, I think, a very important subject. Thank you. Thank you.
Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you. Be well. Okay, there you have it.
Thank you for tuning in to
Talk Line with Zev Brenner, America's premier Jewish broadcast. The pulse beat of the Jewish community.
For continuous Jewish programs, talklinenetwork.com or our 24-hour-a-day listen line at 641-741-0389. For past shows, you can find us on iTunes, Spotify, Amazon, YouTube, Instagram, and all major podcast platforms or jewishpodcast.org. Thanks for listening to the talklinenetwork.com.
Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.